amendment that you could omit the word psychological damage, those words from your amendment.
In fact, would you like it just directly based on abuse of the child and leave it at that?
Madam Chair,
go ahead.
When I drafted this bill, legislative counsel took out my words physical and sexual abuse and substituted assault and battery. Apparently, they found that physical and sexual abuse was too nonspecific and instead drafted it as assault and battery. I'm not comfortable enough with the legislative process to understand why that occurred or if that is a necessary amendment. I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
Fortunately, I'm sorry. May I comment?
Yes, go
theirs
ahead,
is not the will of God, nor is theirs the word of God, and many of us have learned that, and particularly on this committee, which has about 10 out of 12 members are lawyers, and so we don't necessarily admit that other lawyers know better than we do, although they may well.
Other comments, questions for Ms. Snyder?
Do you prefer to see sexual, I'm sorry, may I ask that question?
Go ahead.
Would you prefer to see sexual and physical abuse in there? As opposed to assault and battery, which to me is an old-fashioned term that doesn't really fit in the Oregon system anymore.
Of course, Representative Mannix, attorneys make terrible clients, and I think we've been put on notice what the advice of our attorneys are. Is.
But you would prefer?
I'd like to give it further thought. I quite frankly accept it at face value, Madam Chair, the wisdom of legislative counsel in making this proposal. I believe that physical and sexual abuse is significantly defined, at least by the body of criminal case law that has evolved around those issues, that I know it when I see it, and I believe I could plead it and prove it under those circumstances, certainly with more impact than saying this is an assault and battery and trying to explain what that concept means to a jury.
Representative Minnis.
Ms. Snyder, in 1985, we amended the definition of child abuse in Oregon to include psychological abuse. And I don't know whether you're aware.
Yes.
But the question I have is whether there have been any appellate court cases in Oregon that have served to define psychological abuse since the inception of that amendment to statute.
Madam Chair and Representative Minnis, I know that I have been involved in litigation where psychological abuse was alleged, but I'm not going to be able to quote book and verse of the case law. I would be happy to follow up with that if there's not going to be a final decision on this today.
Even if there is, at some point it would be nice to know what the status of that
yes.
is.
Well, I would suggest to the committee, Representative Mannix, we are going to need to move on to House Bill 2421 while we have Representative Mason with us, and he's going to need to be leaving. I don't think we're going to be ready to go ahead. The discussion at this point leads me to believe that this needs more work.
Well,
go ahead.
It seems to me we have a conceptual amendment, and our counsel should come back to us with specific language, and we have enough direction where we could sit down, and if there's a couple of words we want to play with either way. So I would urge that perhaps we can agree on the conceptual amendment and have counsel come back with that, at least something to try to accomplish that.
I'd like to see it in writing before I vote.
Representative Edmondson, Representative Edmondson suggested he'd like to see it in writing. Maybe Chair Mason could help me with what to do with a motion that is on the table, which the chair would like to seek unanimous consent, if I could, or maybe you would, Representative Mannix, be willing to withdraw your motion for the time being so that we can raise it at a later time and allow the subcommittee to go ahead with House Bill 2421 while we have full subcommittee.
That's that little sweetheart.
That's the sweetheart bill.
Involving
I would like to have us get back to that right away. I just wanted to have some direction. Maybe Chairman Mason's done straw votes before. Some poll to know whether or not it's worth sitting down with someone to work this out, because if there isn't support for the concept, then I don't even want to bother doing it.
I appreciate you withdrawing your motion, Representative Mannix, and I also think your suggestion on taking a straw vote is a good idea, and if you want to pass something around while we're working on House Bill 2421, we will then leave our work session on House Bill 2668 and go into work session on House Bill 2421.
Now, Madam Chair, is it Representative Mannix of the 91 amendment? Is that what you're talking about?
1991.
Is that the 1991. Wait a second. Yes. On House Bill 2421, Representative Mannix has suggested an effective date of July 1, 1991. Would you like to make that a motion, Representative Mannix?
I so move.
I promise I won't abuse too many more of your motions today.
Is that psychological abuse?
Motion abuse.
The motion on House Bill 2421 is to amend it so that the effective date becomes July 1, 1991.
Can I speak to that?
Representative Mason.
Well, looking at the straw poll, I think that that's where the counting, if I might, I want to steal your thunder, but I...
It's a strong constitutional argument that you make, Representative Mason.
That 1991, if I can count, has a strong constitutional argument. Found wanting in the balance here.
Is there any objection to the amendment? Sure. Yes, Representative Calhoun. Will the clerk, would you like to state the basis for your objection, Representative Calhoun?
Well, the only... processes and I just haven't been persuaded from the point of view on this. The whole process I found repugnant, and I'd like to just send it over.
Thank you, Representative Calhoun. Those comments are part of the record. Would the clerk call the roll?
The roll is on,
on
the amendment.
Calhoun?
No.
Clark?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye.
Mason?
Aye.
Minnis?
Aye.
Chair Bowman?
Aye. The amendment, the motion carries. The bill is amended. Representative Mannix, do you...
I move the bill as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Discussion?
I have a comment.
Representative Minnis.
I guess. I wasn't particularly persuaded by the arguments of the cities and counties either, but one of the things that does concern me is why SAFE wasn't present to testify. I did get one comment from one of the other members explaining their reasons why, or at least their version. But I guess what I'd like to do is when we look at the fiscal analysis and before it goes to the floor, I would feel more comfortable if at some point in time fiscal, or legislative fiscal, had the opportunity to get some feedback from SAFE so that when it does go to the floor to look at whether or not it has any savings. And I think that'll have some impact on the floor with the acceptance or rejection of the measure. So it's just a side comment. If they do, they do. If they don't, they don't.
I appreciate that comment. I guess the comment that the chair would make is that we're now passing a bill which very well could be passed in the next coming session by that Judiciary Committee and by that Legislative Assembly, and we go through a process where that bill was sent to Ways and Means for consideration, which might very well have been a more pragmatic approach to this bill. I have talked at some length with Legislative Fiscal and with the Executive Department General Services people who are so concerned about the cost, and I appreciate their concern and also the concern of local government. And I think that that really is the issue here, is whether the cost overrides the policy consideration that the committee has spent so much time agonizing about. I'm not sure that we aren't really punting by doing this. And maybe in the process, my concern, Representative Mannix, on the bill as it now reads as amended, is that I want to make sure that we have the opportunity to examine this again in the Ways and Means process before it becomes effective.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mannix.
The main reason for my motion was to allow counties and cities and other local government units that are adversely affected ample time to not just budget, but in terms of budgeting, budgeting is not an overnight process. They need to plan for their budgeting in regard to this, and I think giving them a 2-year implementation timeline allows them to plan for increased insurance rates and so on and so forth. It also might allow some of them to take another look at recovery themselves and third-party liability actions, which some of them seem to have overlooked as prospects for them to recover in regard to their own injured employees, injured by other government agencies. There's a lot of interaction there that I would expect to occur, and certainly Ways and Means when this comes up, the executive branch ought to make a point of reminding Ways and Means about the impact of this legislation with plenty of time to make a modification if it was really needed.
Thank you, Representative Edmondson. I'm sorry, Representative Mannix. Representative Edmondson, would you like to add something?
Hear, hear.
Would the clerk call the roll, please? Motion is House Bill 2421 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Yes.
Mason?
Aye.
Mannix?
Aye.
Edmondson?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Calhoun?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. Representative Mannix, we'll return to our work session on House Bill 2668.
Thank you. How did our straw poll do?
Well, it got stuck at the chair. And let me see if I can help this out a little bit. Representative Calhoun, your impression of your inclination on House Bill 2668 with Representative Mannix's amendment?
I think specify what types of causes of action we're going to allow. We can try to pick some general areas along the administrative rules to figure out later on. We can enumerate 10 different types of causes of action to give that extended period. I personally still think that maybe the other area in allowing the person at least 1 year, and I wasn't quite sure what the difference is now in terms of if they are ever cut off prior to the age of 19 presently, but I think it's important, assuming they have some parents that aren't acting in their best interest, to give the person some shot at acting in their own accord, even if it is only between their 18th and 19th birthday. And I don't know if we're looking to get rid of that provision altogether, if that provision is already in the law or not.
Can I comment on that? Thank you.
Yes, Representative Mannix, go ahead.
Actually, there is not a time zone up to the age of 19. While you're out of the room, we had some interchange about that, and it's theoretically possible. In fact, I'm sure it is practically a fact that in many cases the statute of limitations expire well before the person is 18. And this says 5 years beyond 18, mainly because there of the testimony we heard in the Crime and Corrections Subcommittee on the child abuse criminal extension about how it takes several years sometimes once out of a bad environment to recognize what had happened and to own up to it. That we dealt with that in the statute of limitations side. We weren't quite that generous on the criminal side. And if there was some strong sentiment to say 3 years beyond 18 instead of 5 years, I'd consider that. I used 5 years only because there's another statute of limitation reference to 5 years, and I thought, well, the less additional numbers of years that we use in these statutes, the better.
Representative Mannix, counsel and I are just consulting on some language that he would like to propose that might get us out of the ringer here a little bit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If going to line 16, let me read the language that I have and where I've removed some language. if at the time of cause of action for blank, and then we would fill in what needs to be filled in there, accrues, any person entitled to bring an action mentioned in ORS 12.10, 12.50, 12.70, and 12.250 is within 18 years of age, the time of such disability shall not be part of the time limited for the commencement of action, but the period of time within which the action shall be brought shall not be extended more than 5 years after such disability ceases. Madam Chair, leaving the blank up there on line 16 as to what particular offense would a language would trigger.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Representative
Question
Park.
For counsel. The statutory references that you just gave us, are those identical to the ones in the original bill?
That's correct.
Okay, and with my understanding that it was precisely those statutory references that opened the door to claims in areas other than abuse.
I think those are the disabilities. Judy, can you help us out?
Madam Chair, I cannot do this from memory. Chapter 12 is the limitations of actions and suits.
That's and the difference between this and the bar exam, Ms. Snyder. It's kind of.
The first two provisions, 12.010 and 12.020, are very generic. For example, 12.020 is when the statute's deemed to have begun, and if you serve, if you file before the
statutes mentioned here, though, that's all I
got. If you let me see if we can maybe answer this on a broader scope without going into these individually. Do these pertain to the causes, the types of causes of action, or do these pertain to the types of disability?
Types of causes of action. That's the most succinct way of saying it. The only section that deals with disability is 12.160, and that describes the disability, insanity, imprisonment, or minority.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mannix.
I prefer to leave alone the language in ORS 12.160 sub 1, which is actually the whole statute right now, for this reason. These kinds of statute of limitations statutes are usually subject to intense judicial scrutiny, and there's a lot of decisions out there, I dare say, interpreting what this means. It's been the subject of endless CLEs and law seminars and the like. I prefer to add a separate provision that doesn't go through all of that prior language and change it, but simply adds another subsection to 2160 that says exactly what we want to do for specific types of causes of action, not referencing back to other statutory provisions, but just says exactly what we want to do for child abuse. Something along the lines of, notwithstanding any other provision of law, the time limited for the commencement of any action directly based on child abuse shall be that which is stated in the statutes, or shall be 5 years beyond the age of 18 years, whichever is later. Period. We've got a separate, clean provision that doesn't require a lot of cross-references, and it just says we're giving this supplemental statute of limitations for child abuse.
Thank you, Representative Mannix. Are there other comments or questions? Representative Edmondson.
Well, I don't have a problem with the word child. I have a problem with the word abuse. In a civil context, abuse to me means injury. In a criminal context or in another context, child abuse has a very understood meaning. And I guess what I'm getting at here is, when does an injury to a child in a civil context become child abuse? Now, I'm fairly satisfied, at least, and I hope that if I'm wrong, that somebody's going to speak up here and correct me, that we're talking about the child abuse type of situation. And that, in a criminal context, we've seen the recklessness and intent are the two categories of activity that give rise to criminal liabilities. And therefore, it seems to me consistent that we talk in terms of reckless acts that injure a child or intentional acts that injure a child, and not get bogged down in whether it's psychological, emotional, sexual, physical, metaphysical, religious, you know, lifestyle, or any of those sorts of categories. It seems like that's what the cause of action is going to sort out, the type of conduct. But what if we're trying to limit it, it seems to me that's the limitation ought to be on the tortfeasor's state of mind, if you will, whether it's recklessness or intentional. And maybe just by limiting it that way, we sort of omit the negligence, which is the floodgates concern, as I take it, about whether we're going to include garden variety car wrecks in this sort of a thing.
Can we? May I?
Yes. Representative Maddox.
There is a reference in the Child Welfare Services Statute on reporting of child abuse that defines abuse as physical injury to a child. I'll try to synthesize this. Any mental injury which shall include only observable and substantial impairment of the child's mental or psychological ability to function caused by cruelty to the child with due regard to the culture of the child. Sexual abuse, including but not, and they go through types of sex abuse. Sexual exploitation, including contributing to the sexual delinquency of a minor. And so on and so forth. It's a very lengthy statement, and it's obvious to me it was developed after probably extensive hearings involving social welfare agencies. We perhaps would want to take a look at that, and then it's about one-third of one column long, and so I won't try to read it to you, but that seems to me to be an excellent definition of abuse in terms of what we're the kind of abuse that we're willing to leave the door open on.
Representative Maddox, perhaps then to say any claim for damages arising out of conduct
as described in
would by reference tie it in, but not limited as far as restricting the type of the civil action. You see, I think that the problem that I'm having is making the leap from the civil action, which is, you know, includes all sorts of common law concepts and other sorts of things, to statutory actions that are not intended to apply in a civil for damages type
about
of
for child abuse as defined in ORS 418.740. And then you would have to look at it, see if you're comfortable with the definition.
I know what it says.
I'm not asking you to jump in on it.
Representative Maddox, once again, I'm going to remove this from if you would be so kind as to allow us to have a little bit more time to consider what the content of this conceptual amendment is going to be, and if you would work with Legislative Council and possibly continue your conversations with other members of the subcommittee.
Can I ask one question?
Yes, go ahead.
Before I do that, is there a straw poll favorable enough for me to go ahead and do that?
Sure.
Well, I think, Representative Maddox, I know I had indicated that was a yes on your amendment, and I would much prefer to have a copy of something that had been drafted and looked at by Legislative Council. I would prefer it so much that I'd be willing to change that and vote no on the conceptual amendment today, mainly because
I think
quality.
Me. I just wanted to make sure that people felt comfortable with the concept, and I'll go play with it. That's all I'm asking.
That's we can go through and poll the subcommittee, Representative Maddox, but I think that the expression of support for your concept is there.
Okay,
Representative
thank you.
Clark.
Madam Chair, in case Representative Maddox wasn't clear, where I need to get off is at psychological abuse. And that's just, I've sat here and thought this thing through for an hour now. I don't say that psychological abuse can't happen and can't be real, but in my mind, I'm not sure that I want to extend the statute of limitations for that darn near indefinitely, as opposed to physical physical abuse. That's just my personal...
Well, as long as I know that you people are even looking at child abuse as something you want to deal with, we'll draft an amendment that you can look at and deal with the language of the amendment. That's the only direction I wanted. Was it worthwhile to draft something? Sounds like it is. Thank you.
Thank you. On Thursday. We will go into work session on House Bill 2599. This is kind of first impression. Actually, no one signed up for a public hearing. I don't know what the will of the committee is on this bill. Council?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2599, currently now, once notice of appeal has been served and properly filed, the Supreme Court of the Court of Appeals has jurisdiction of the case, except the trial court has jurisdiction for the purposes of assessing attorney fees and costs. Thus, the trial court could not rectify a clerical mistake or relieve a party from judgment based on mistake, fraud, or misrepresentation. The measure would allow the trial court jurisdiction of a case before the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals for the purposes of rectifying a clerical mistake, fraud, misrepresentation, or for any other grounds set forth in ORCP 71. This bill was brought to us by the Council on Court Procedures, Madam Chair.
Move the bill to the full committee.
Right. Representative Menace, move the bill to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Representative Menace, would you like to discuss the motion?
Sure, sounds like a good one to me. I don't have any discussion. I mean, unless some of the attorneys on it, it sounds to me that it seems reasonable that you have the ability to go back and...
Could I ask a question in aid of objection?
If you could add...
That's like a court term, isn't it?
At that point, you duck.
Yeah.
Representative Edmondson, do you have something to add to the discussion here?
One small step towards a potentially helpful change in the law, and this is limited to trial courts, as I understand. I guess we're discussing here with counsel. Limited to trial courts and doesn't affect administrative actions. This would allow the trial, as I'm just trying to understand here, it would allow the trial court to go ahead and enter these orders, notwithstanding the appeal.
That's correct.
So it preserves trial court jurisdiction in this limited context.
That's correct.
Okay, since we didn't have any... The proponents of the bill didn't appear before us. I was just wanted to be absent.
For the record, I would like to state that we're notified.
I'd like to make a comment on that also for the record. The Council on Court Procedures has been subject to some scrutiny and criticism from this subcommittee. And I think that actually this proposal fulfills the purpose that they were created for and that they're around for, and that is to make recommendations just like this one that, as Representative Edmondson ventures, constitute a small step in improvement of court procedures. If there's no further discussion, I'd like to vote on Representative Minnis's motion. Representative Minnis?
I just have one question, and would this, in terms of the trial court having jurisdiction to take care of clerical problems and little, would that help to facilitate an appeal based on some kind of an error in the document or the record or something of that nature?
Well, I think, Representative Minnis, it allows the trial court to take a step that would, based on whatever reason, that would take away the basis for the appeal in the first place, save everybody a lot of time and expense.
I guess that's what I'm getting at, is it would maybe preclude an appeal from even being necessary.
Yeah, that's the idea. That's the object. Yeah.
Madam Chair, I just want to point out that my reference to administrative agencies is under the Administrative Procedures Act, a state agency can retrieve its order, correct it, reissue it, and perhaps make this correction. So I think what this is intending to do is to give the trial courts a similar sort of power, and which is helpful to cutting down on litigation. And I'm just saying that as my understanding, because we haven't had anybody.
Madam Chair.
Sorry, Representative Clark.
This needs to happen. One point of personal experience, we had a case last year where I actually had to file an appeal simply to toll a statute of limitations on an appeal. Meanwhile, there was substantial work that needed to happen at the trial court, so we were filing motions simultaneously in the trial court and in the appellate court because we were unclear as to who had jurisdiction to fix the technical problems that happened at the trial court, but we couldn't let the time continue to run on the appeal. And so It was literally absurd.
It's a great motion, Representative Minnis. It should carry. Is there further discussion? Representative Edmondson?
I'll just call the question.
Call the question. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Vaughn?
Yeah.
Calhoun?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Edmondson?
Yeah.
Representative Minnis?
Yes.
Chair Bowman?
Yes. Motion carries. I think that leaves us with House Bill 2764, if I'm correct here. Chair would move to amend House Bill 2764 at line 16 to replace the word clerk with the word plaintiff. That's moving the adoption of the amendment as proposed by the Oregon Judicial Department, dated March 20th, 1989. Is there any objection? Is there any discussion of the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? Move the...